You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development.
Our speakers are arranged according to your program, plus one more speaker. So we have Mr. Darrell Reed from York University and Canadian Association for Studies in Cooperation, Emily Kawano from the Center for Popular Economics, USA, and also board member of RIPES, Jim Bildell from the University of Coimbra, Jose Luis Coragui, you know him already, from the Universidad Nacional de General Sarmiento, Mr. Porzinger, and then there would be a video, and then Mr. Peter Oting of UNRIDS. So this is the order. So Darrell, you can start if you're already ready.
Thanks, everyone. So the question for the conference is, what are the potentials and limits of the SSE? And there's three different types of discourses in which I think we need to have some recommendations. The first one is really around the social sciences and positive analysis, how we as social scientists need to look at the socially and solidarity economy. The first one we heard about was the definitional question, how do we define it? A positive question. I don't have a lot to say about that. You've heard about how people are trying to define the social and solidarity economy from external perspectives and also internal perspectives. Those are more your anthropologists and sociologists asking, what is solidarity? How do we understand it? And that's something I think we really need to go into a little bit more. I think earlier on we heard a little bit about different conceptions of solidarity at different levels. Is it kinship bonds, sort of the old Durkheimian notion of mechanical solidarity? Is it more shared interests in complex society, more the Durkheimian notion of organic solidarity? Or is it more a shared commitment to procedural norms and citizenship, a more discursive democracy understanding of solidarity? So we really need to flesh those out in terms of definitions, I think. I won't say anything about the second positive question, which is the empirical question, how does a social and solidarity economy function? I'll just skip over that. The third positive question, though, we have is, why does a social and solidarity economy function the way it does? The theoretical question. And here I would just invoke the name of a former ILO person, Bob Cox, who for 25 years was here, and the question of structures and agency. How do we understand structure in terms of institutions, power dynamics, ideology? How does structure constrain the social and solidarity economy? And the question of agency, how do structures change over time? How did we move from a form of production, you know, the Fordist production, into post-Fordism? How do we move from welfare states into neoliberal states? How does that happen? What's the agency that allows for that? Those are the big sort of questions we have in terms of social scientists. Another key area that we really need to look at, though, are the normative questions. And here, this is where we need the ethicists, the political philosophers to come in and ask us, because we are making all sorts of normative judgments about the social and solidarity economy. At the basis of a lot of our questions are, what is the good life? That means, practically, how do we conceive of work? Should work be a question, should be an essential element of the social and solidarity economy? Our relationship to the environment, our understanding of consumption, how does all that fit in? Is that a core understanding? Do we want democratic control of work as a core value, or is it just a way, a form of strategy so that we can control things more? Those are very strong questions of identity, who we are. Second level of normative analysis, though, is a question of procedural fairness. And here we're really talking about, we've been talking a lot about markets. What makes markets fair? And can capitalist markets be fair? A lot of the social and solidarity economy is obviously cast in relationship to the capitalist economy. How are we evaluating the capitalist economy? Is it essentially evil? Perhaps not. Is it practically unreformable, is the question. You know, the power dynamics that go on when you have private ownership in complex economies, does it really undermine the possibility to have anything that approaches ideal markets? So how do we deal with these things? How do we evaluate them? And how is a social and solidarity economy and markets different from capitalist markets? Is it in terms of decommodification? What is it? We have to really think, what do markets mean in a social and solidarity economy? The third question, questions of legitimacy and democratic practice. Historically, we've conceptualized democracy in terms of states. What we are in, when we're looking at the social and solidarity economy, in our present context, we have to rethink democracy because we're trying to break down those traditional state barriers between the economy and the political realm so we can have more participatory structures. What does democracy mean when you get outside of the state into economic organizations, when you get up into the international realm? How do we understand democracy? Who are the participants? What roles do they have at different levels across different realms? So these normative questions then become very, very important. And this is, I think, where we've not yet really started to take up the challenge. We really need to bring in the ethicists, political theorists as well, to help us understand these things. The third types of realms, and we'll move to different actors here then, would be sort of the questions of strategy. That's where we need to bring in the professionals, associations, the lawyers, the business people, and actually applied scientists as well, people who really work in the realm of strategy. What's the basis of strategy? How do we make sure that when we're doing strategy, we've gone through these previous two steps of our social science analysis, our normative justification, and how do we make sure that when we bring those in, we understand the scope? And the key question here, which has been raised but not really examined as much as we need to think of, what is the scope of the social and solidarity economy? Is it going to be complementary to the existing capitalist economy, fill in gaps, or do we really need it to change structures, right? And this is the key question. And is it just the question of economic structures, or is it also political structures? Do we need to constrain the capitalist economy for political reasons, right? Is it the case that when capitalist economies get too powerful, then they undermine the very possibility of us controlling them democratically? So we can actually have a very strong political reason for having to scale up the social and solidarity economy so we can reduce the economic power of the capitalist economy so that we can actually have political democracy as well. So these are very important questions in terms of the scope. What are the possibilities there? The final thing is then just in terms of practical methods around production, around states, around ideology. How do we really learn about innovation and strategy, learning? Key role for action research. If we're going to talk about scaling up, why are we not doing action research around this, around social inclusion, around sustainable production, the importance of doing that? In terms of the states, we've heard around co-construction, decentralized planning. Again, breaking down the barriers between states, social and solidarity economy in terms of delivery of services, economic planning, and ideology in a neutral sense here. The fact that we have to have a consistent, coherent set of ideas of what we mean, and we have to be able to implement those, especially in education. Who here was trained in a business school in the social and solidarity economy? Anyone? We need to be able to do that consistently, right? This and ideology here, we really have to be able to help the broader society understand why this is not something fringe, that, and why it has to be central to how we do the economy. I'm done.
Wow. Thank you very much. We'll now go to Emily.
Thank you. Yeah, so I just wanted to raise a few important areas for research and action. First, as has been mentioned a lot, a continued conversation about the definition, the vision, the conceptualization, the framework of the social solidarity economy. I wrote a little think piece that sort of looked at the difference between the social economy and the solidarity economy. They are not the same. And I think a lot of confusion arises by smooshing them together, but right now that's what we have. But it's good to just be clear about what the difference is. That will answer some of the questions like, is it a sector? Is it like the third sector? Or is it all the sectors? Does it include the state? Or is it just the third sector, right? So those are some of the confusions that arise by smooshing these two frameworks together. And I think that having greater clarity about the difference between social economy and solidarity economy also helps to answer the question about transformative versus complementing capitalism. There have been a lot of different views presented throughout this conference. I think in REPES, so the Intercontinental Network for the Promotion of the Social Solidarity Economy, it feels like there is a fair amount of agreement about what we mean by the social solidarity economy. And we clearly state that it's an alternative framework of economic development. So very much an alternative sort of post-capitalist development. There's still a little bit of controversy over that or discussion about that, but in general, it's very heavily weighted towards that transformational position. So just to mention that REPES is a network of practitioners and other support organizations. We are engaged in a process of making space for dialogue about the definition, the vision, the concept of the social solidarity economy on the continental level. This process will feed into the fifth International Forum on the Social Solidarity Economy in Manila in October. So that's a whole process. We certainly would welcome the participation of researchers, but it is also very important that this it's not just a research project. It's not just like there's an answer out there to be found. It needs to be a process of dialogue, and we see this as a beginning of dialogue and exploration of the whole issue. It's a beginning and not the end, but it's very useful to have the accompaniment of researchers, and that's important. The second point that I think is really important to keep in mind is the critical nature of moving beyond atomization. So we had a lot of presentations that were talking about a particular sector, whether it's co-ops or social currency, what have you. And sometimes people are perfectly happy working in that particular sector without ever mentioning social solidarity economy. The power of social solidarity economy is it pulls together these seemingly disparate and separate practices and tries to articulate it as an economic system, as an alternative economic system. And so that all these practices can see themselves, hopefully, part of the project, right, as part of the same sort of larger transformational project. And here I just want to go through this, which I use in educational workshops that I do to really underscore the systemic nature of the solidarity economy. So we start with looking at principles. So we articulate it in the U.S. in terms of solidarity, equity, democracy, on all levels, so equity in all dimensions, race, class, gender, et cetera, sustainability, and pluralism, meaning that it's not a one-size-fits-all model. Different things are going to work in different places at different times. It's all sort of nested in the world ecosystem. Okay. which is comprised of the natural world, so, you know, water, life, humans, animals, etc., as well as the socially created world, things like spirituality, culture, language, tradition, etc. So you take that natural world and the socially created world, you have a system of governance, and that in turn largely, not completely, but largely shapes what kind of an economic system you have. So governance in a solidarity economy would be things like participatory planning, participatory budgeting, etc. Note here that the government is not just an entity to lobby. It's not just a separate entity from the solidarity economy. It's both an object to demand change from, but also an object of change, right? So conceiving the government as part of the solidarity economy and something that we need to reclaim from the lobbyists. So different economic sectors, we have production. And here's a bunch of just examples. It's not comprehensive, but just for example, you know, co-ops, unpaid care work, non-monetized economy is very important to include there. Other things have been mentioned in this conference. So production and thinking about closing the ecological loop. So some of the waste going into the natural environment, some of it being recycled into production. Some of it is direct production for use. Some of it is production for sale or exchange. Looking at the sphere of distribution and exchange, we have fair trade, we have direct exchange like CSAs. Some of them are sold for money, some of them are sold for alternative or social money. In the sphere of consumption use, all kinds of things, buying clubs, co-housing, community land trusts, etc. Again, closing the loop. And then in finance and capital, all kinds of examples from credit unions to cooperative loan funds, peer lending, etc. So the point of this is to say in all these spheres, in all these economic spheres, there are lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of examples to draw from. Some of them are new. Some of them are very old. Some of them are mainstream, like a lot of government programs, you know, public libraries, public education, right? These are keepers, I assume, in our vision of the world we want to build. So very important to keep that systemic framework in mind. And also, as people are working as people are doing their sectoral work, it's important when it's appropriate to fold in the notion of solidarity economy to build that. Otherwise, these sectors continue to operate in their own little silos. I know it's not always appropriate, or it's not always, it's too controversial, but when it's possible, to be able to feed that in is important. Education is really important. You mentioned that. I want to say education is also a tool for organizing. So I've done lots of workshops on solidarity economy, and very often this seeds some kind of organizing, strategizing process. I want to mention the importance of popular education, so really starting with where people are. I think the kind of education, formal education is important, but also thinking about that community-based education where you're really respecting the knowledge and experience of the people in the communities. I want to mention mapping, the importance of mapping and economic integration. So RIPES has a project called ESS Global. The website is exactly that, essglobal.info. The purpose of this mapping has many different aspects. One is just to visibilize the solidarity economy, the social solidarity economy. You can look at a map and you can see all these points. It has a simple impact. Two, it enables consumers to find solidarity economy goods and services. Three, it enables the development of supply chains, solidarity economy supply chains. producers and suppliers can find each other and connect and do businesses with each other. And four, it's a way of generating data. So people have mentioned that there's really a need to ground social solidarity economy and empirical research. We are very poor on data. For instance, what is the economic impact? What is the multiplier effect of social solidarity economy practices? What are the social impacts? So the mapping process, as you're talking to these practices, to gather that data about how many workers, what's your output, what are your wages, et cetera, are important, and that's part of the project. The RIPES map is right now has maybe 8 countries included, but the hope is that the continents will move more mapping, and that they'll be able to connect to the global map, which can draw data regardless of which platform is used. So that's a big undertaking, this mapping. The last point I want to make is the importance of social solidarity economy networks like RIPES, and RIPES as an intercontinental network is then comprised of the continental networks, which are then comprised of national and sectoral networks on all the continents. So building this and strengthening these networks is really important, partly because social solidarity economy is really about making these connections. But also it's very important in terms of serving as an intermediary. So instead of all these disparate, separate groups trying to deal with policymakers and institutions, that there's a intermediary network that's able to speak with more of a unified voice. So I will end there.
Thank you. Really, I like the brief and direct to the point presentations of our resource speakers. So we're setting a standard here, and I hope we can keep this up. Now let's welcome Jem Bendel from the University of Coimbra. Jem.
Thank you very much. I've been listening with interest because the last few days it's been an eye opener for me. I don't work on the social and solidarity economy as such. I've been working on what some may consider a subset of that, which is complementary currencies, which you will have heard about on a number of occasions. But listening in the last few days, I think a key theme I've heard, and also Daryl just repeated it now, is this relationship between the social and solidarity economy, or what we're calling that, and the dominant model that's produced such uneven and often unsustainable development. And for me, that's critical. I mean, is this a way of communities coping or disengaging or complementing or transforming the dominant economic model which has caused so much harm? And I think from talking to some people, there is a hope that it's somehow sort of a beachhead on the shores of the over-financialized economy. And actually it's a way of sort of grouping us together and clarifying what we're about and proving that economic activity can be done in a different way. So for me, the really exciting element of this research agenda is that question of scale and transformation. So I would be very keen to see people thinking about their future research in terms of how are we affecting broader transformation. And I think that is essential now because of the global challenge we have with climate change. This year we passed 400 parts per million of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. We've already had a 0.8 degree temperature rise in the last 100 years, and we are expected to hit 4 degrees with the current pattern of carbon emissions by 2100. The World Bank, not the most alarmist organisation, said in November last year that adaptation to a 4-degree warmed world is not certain. So that if you let that statement sink in, what it means is we are actually facing massive disruption. So I think we always need to be thinking, to what extent are our strategies addressing this need for a fundamental transformation worldwide? So that's my first thought. What that leads me to then think of is that we need to look at what might be structural impediments to the growth and scaling of SSE. And in the work that I've done, I've come to the understanding that the existing monetary system is a fundamental impediment to supporting and growing more of the kind of enterprise and non-profit associations and so on that we wish to see. So I recommend the viewpoint by Christian Arnsberger, which is on the UNRWS site, which speaks of a structural bottleneck for the financing of SSE over time. And you only really come to understand that if you realize the nature of our existing monetary system, where in most economies over 90% of the money that we're using is created as debt by private banks with interest, and how that sets up dynamics which support and incentivize values which are certainly not the type of values that I've heard anyone mentioning the last 3 days. So we need to look at how the banking system can better help scale SSE, and multiple strategies for that. Now, of course, there's work to be done on monetary reform, but I think one of the values I've heard in the last few days is this sense of self-reliance and moving beyond complaining and critique to actually mobilizing with what we have. And so with that value applied, I think we can look at innovations at grassroots level with alternative financial systems and even alternative currencies. There's been a lot of discussion of definitions, and this is most certainly a field-forming exercise. I think often definitional discussions fall down when we think we're trying to describe what is rather than what we're choosing it to be. So we need to think about the grouping that we're making, not only what's in, but what we're excluding. Now, I've made a pitch for community currencies, complementary currencies, alternative financial systems, and the whole monetary angle to be seen as critical to our understanding of SSE as a thing, but also as something of potential transformational power. But I work in a very different world to this at the moment. I'm on a task force for the World Economic Forum, and we're looking at something called the sharing economy. And I see these two worlds not talking to each other at all. And yet, we have to realize that there is this world of mainstream business and mainstream investment and finance, which is looking at new opportunities to invest and try new economic models for development, supposedly with an explicit social purpose, terms like impact investing, venture philanthropy, social enterprise, and so on. Now, these things are spreading, and they have massive potential. I wonder, who here is staying in Geneva, either through couch surfing or Airbnb? Anybody? Someone there. There you go. Airbnb was sold for a few $100 million just a year or two ago, and this is a company which just helps people to rent out their rooms. There are lots of car sharing schemes now as well, and where people don't have to own a car, but they can share a car. And the thing is, these new infrastructures of sharing are actually being developed and marketed in terms of languages that sound a bit like solidarity, sort of mutual support, getting more value with less resources by working together better. But they're creating all these new privately owned, often San Francisco owned, global infrastructures of sharing. So what I would like to see more of is the sophistication that you have in your analysis of what is and isn't development, not applied to some new ghetto in development studies, but actually take this more broadly and engage in these conversations with these billionaire investment funds and these huge new enterprises. The discourse of SSE must not remain in SSE. We must actually broaden it and engage beyond that. That's what I've tried to do with this task force, with the WEF, and I've managed to get the notion of non-monetized exchange as something that really is important to look at, so that we shouldn't restrict people's ability to work together and to share just because they are cash poor. So some people may think, ah, yes, but if you're really looking at poverty alleviation, are these things relevant? Well, let's not forget, half a billion people last year in China are online. In India last year, more people are online with smartphones than they are with desktops. And although the very poor may not have a smartphone, then they may now beginning to be, in the next year or two, getting financial services from someone in the village that does. And so we need to recognize that there's a whole world of innovation, and we need to have a view on that and try and influence it. So in summary, I think the environmental situation means that we need to ask this question of how is SSE leading to transformation? How do we scale up? With that in mind, then the monetary dimension is critical, and within that, I think we should recognize the leadership of UNRWS, the ILO, and NGLS in making community currencies, complementary currencies, a significant dimension to our agenda. That is actually historic. I don't think the UN has ever before had such an airing of this and a discussion of its potential and limits. And the third thing is we need to make sure we look at mainstream innovations which will affect the future of the SSE and mobilize our sophistication in terms of our research techniques, but also our values in having a voice on those other areas. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jem. Now let's go to José Luis Curaguio.
Thank you. I won't try to make a research program. It would be too much time and too complicated. So I will try to stress some points of research I consider interesting. The first one, it has to do with definition. But I would say it could be interesting to make some kind of sociology of the definitions. So why do we choose one definition or the other? Maybe because we are in a certain institution. At a given university, to be legitimate, you cannot choose that definition. Maybe if you are in certain government, maybe if you are in certain United Nations organization. So it's not just a question of truth. It's a question of the context, institutional context. I think it will be very nice that we are pluralistic at least at the beginning, and see how many definitions and what is the meaning of the definitions and what is behind the definitions or in front of the definition. I will start working with an umbrella. And then we see, of course, each one of us will choose a definition. Hopefully, we will not stick to that definition for the rest of our lives. If we learn, we can change the definition, making it explicit. So sometimes I think definition is the definition. I think we should be more open than that. Now, behind definitions are theories. So we should make explicit in what theory is embedded this definition. Again, I think we had to be pluralistic, but we had to be critical too. We had to consider what it means to be attached to a theory that is oriented by the utopian of the perfect market, for instance, and a definition that is putting in the center social struggling or things like that. That's the first point. The second has to do with practice and the theory. We need a systematization of practices. and you cannot really do it without theory. So we had to see how we choose a conceptual operational system to systematize the experiences. I think we had to go into typologies of practices, of kinds of organization, and to be able to recognize forms of social and solidarity economy which are not usually considered. Today, Mr. Quiñones was saying that what's the unit of analysis? Maybe it's at the meso level and not at the micro level. For instance, in the law of social solidarity, popular economy in Ecuador, it is recognized the domestic unit as a part of the solidarity economy, and also the communities, which is not easy to find in a typology of this kind of searches. This is related to the legal framework. We should go through the different legal frameworks, very much influenced in general by the cooperative model. And this is important because legal frameworks have to typify. I mean, they have to say who is going to be the object or the agent that the law is referring to. So this typology could help to expand the scope of the legal frameworks. Related to this, to the legal framework, is the research on what position social and solidarity economy occupies in the bureaucratic structure of the governments. It might be in the social development, it might be in the economic ministry, it can be in the production ministry, and that has a meaning too, and I think it will be interesting to see how this changes from case to case. Another point, I think, is related to the first one. We had to reflect on method. What's the method to study social and solidarity economy? I think somebody said it's not the regular economist method. It has to be because the economy is a multidimensional process, so we need, as the positivism has cut knowledge into disciplines, we had to be multidisciplinary. So we need economic anthropology, we need social psychology, we need economy even, we need political economy and different approaches to understand the economy. Another point I would like to make is that the method and the instruments to do the study. For instance, I think that for social and solidarity economy, a participatory method of research is coherent with the ideas of what solidarity is. Another point I would like to make is we should study the background of the social and solidarity economy processes, the cultural background. For instance, we were talking yesterday with Paul about this new paradigm of happiness, or the buen vivir and vivir bien of the Andean country communities in Latin America, or what it means to do social and solidarity economy in a society where patriarcado is very strong, or where race differences are very strong. It wouldn't be the same. If we don't understand the background and we study just the microorganization, even the cooperatives will not function in the same way. So I think we had to do some, and we had to see also the new paradigms or the critique of the old paradigms. For instance, are we criticizing market? Are we criticizing capitalism? Or are we criticizing modernity, which is what some currents are doing now in Latin America? Another point is we should ask ourselves whether these social and solidarity economy definitions and practices are part of an ideological and political project. What is the intention of all this activity? I think this is very important. I find that if you change the political project, you don't find the same things in reality, and you don't propose the same things. The question of who are the social and political actors. I'm not speaking of the micro level, who is doing what. I'm talking about movements. I'm talking about currents. Who are the social and political actors, and can they become political subjects? So this, for instance, is a question we can pose to the World Social Forum. All these new social movements, how they include in their agenda the social and solidarity economy or the other economy question. Finally, I think this is a proposal we should do some research, but also to make proposals. I think we need a communication policy, a communication strategy. How do we present to society what is this social and solidarity economy? Because there is a problem of legitimacy. There is a problem of understanding what are we doing. We should make the proposals plausible, credible to society, that we can solve problems better, that we have a different social project, etc. And I think I finish here. Thank you.
Cinco minutos in punto. Thank you very much. You. Now we go to Mr. Paul Singer.
Well, thank you very much. I was listening to what my colleagues here are telling us, and I would like to add a very simple idea. This was a wonderful week here in Geneva, not only for me, I think for many people. We need to keep this. It is not enough to have such a meeting every 4 years. We have to make it permanent. It's a dream of mine. I don't want to go away. But I think informatics makes it possible. I think we can build networks in which the exchange of informations, but not only informations, points of view, values, proposals, hypotheses, which were quite rich the last days, can be made without assembling physically in one point of the universe. In Geneva or in Latin America or in Asia, we can be at home and be in contact and not only learn and can read, but exchange our ideas in any dimension. So I would say, let us go on. As if this meeting never ends. In fact, it will end physically. We have to take our plans and go back to home to work. But at least for me, my work is at least 50% what we did here. Listening, learning, analyzing, proposing, and making practice of it. I'm a practitioner now, and it makes me very happy. But what I want to stress is that the things I heard now in this last session, I couldn't disagree with anyone. They are not the same, but they have enough in common that we can agree with all of them. They are very positive and important proposals. I would like to speak a few minutes about values. One of my latest discoveries is that democracy is probably the best or most important achievement of humanity. It took a long time. You can say at least from the end of the Middle Ages until now, we have been fighting and practicing and experimenting around democracy with the basic idea that as human beings, we have the same dignity and the same amount of respect mutually. This is the necessary precondition to live together and be able to be happy. I learned part of this in Bhutan, where I was at the beginning of this year. I learned, among other things, in Bhutan, that these concerns about how to use democracy to make a better world for everyone is something which is now a very, very large aspiration all over the world. And I understand social solidarity, economy, whatever we want to mean by this, as part of this struggle to improve our life together by using democratic values and using democracy as an institution. And I will finish saying that many of us here made not guesses, but hypotheses of what is going to happen with social and solidarity economy, with capitalism, with the climate and humanity in a different climate. I'm sure that our guesses are not much value, because we are going to learn all the time, as long as we are alive. And to the extent that things change, and they change all the time, we are learning. And by learning, we are able to act more effectively than before. So to finish, I would appeal to all of us here to continue to learn, and learn is impossible alone. To learn, we have to communicate, we must discuss, we must struggle, and I think this was just an experience of that, which confirms at least my hypothesis that it is very, very good to do this together all the time. Thank you very much.
I would just like to add, before going to Mr. Pretty Oting, three more items that were relayed to me only last night. First, the Association of Southeast Asian Nations have taken the challenge of organizing the first intergovernmental forum on SSE in conjunction with the Manila meeting. This will be in October 17 to 18. And I have conveyed the news to Mr. Peter Oting this morning that this will be the first ASEAN leadership forum, and this is the action on policy level. The proposal is that we would like to have this recorded as a direct impact consequence of this conference. So this is the first proposal on policy level. On research, I just learned from the previous session about this practice by Christophe Dunand of, I call it the twinning approach to research. For the RIPAS meeting, we're going to conduct action research in 10 countries. So if anybody would like, you know, to pair, to twin with any of these case writers in the 10 countries in Asia, we will connect them to you. You can look at the framework, you can exchange, you know, the approaches and so forth and so on. So this is another proposal and the research level. And the third is the action level. This is proposal from the Asian Solidarity Economy Council proposing that this conference can probably consider a global day of social solidarity economy, where all practitioners, advocates, and networks of solidarity economy networks all over the world can rejoice and make visibility, political, economic, social, even cultural visibility of SSE in their respective areas and countries. So with that, thank you very much. And we'd now like to call on Mr. Piting to say his words, proposals.
Thank you, Ben. I'll try and make three, if I can, short points about, one, how to leverage SSE in the UN system. I want to mention Gramsci, and we'll then say something about what UNRWS will be doing in this field. One of the objectives of the conference was to raise the profile of SSE in the UN system. And I think we've made a good start. I think it's going to be a long journey. But in that respect, I think the participation of FAO, UNDP, UN Women, UNCTAD, DESA, and of course the ILO was a good beginning. Tactically, if we're going to promote research and this agenda internationally, we need to find not only the right institutions to engage with, we need to find the right entry points, the right thematic windows and issues with which to connect. Now, in terms of the UN, I think there are a number there we should reflect on. Currently, we're in the process of the post-MDG agenda. The international development community says it is rethinking development, and I think this is sort of a good space we have to engage with other UN agencies. This window, however, is likely to close fairly shortly. It won't be going on very long. What we have coming up in 2014 is the UN or International Year of Family Farming. I think that provides another space where the SSE agenda can engage closely with that. 2016, we have the Habitat Summit. And then both short-term and more longer-term, we have the whole sustainability issue, both in terms of the idea of drawing up the Sustainable Development Goals and in terms of the 10-year framework of programs on sustainable consumption and production patterns, which is being coordinated by UNEP. So I think those are also other issues and agendas we can engage with. And as Guy Ryder said, I think what's happening here in the ILO and elsewhere is particularly important of really trying to come to grips with the phenomenon of informalization, casualization, and transformation of the informal economy. So these, I think, are all areas where we can engage with. But perhaps a bit more conceptually, there's another entry point. And it has to do with what we might call the integrative potential, what many of the speakers have referred to here, of SSE. Now, a lot of our debates here have been about the problems and alternatives to capitalism. In mainstream policy circles and UN circles, it's probably not the best entry point to try and go in denouncing capitalism. But there's another way we can do that. And that's by showing how SSE advances the normative agenda of the UN, which is associated both with sustainable development and both with human rights. And from this perspective, from the perspective of sustainable development and the rights-based agenda, SSE, at least on paper, has a lot to offer because of this, what I call its integrative potential. So here, what we've been hearing about over 2-3 days is cases, possibilities that are not only developmental, they can also be emancipatory. They address economic concerns of local economic development, economic diversification, issues of social protection, issues of environmental change and environmental protection, issues of gender equality, and particularly important, of political empowerment. Now, that can fit quite nicely with the normative agenda of the UN that relates to sustainable development and human rights. And surely in context of the global crises, the multiple crises we're going through in recent years, the situation with climate change and the recognition, I think there is a growing recognition that the old models, business as usual, isn't generating the employment, it's not generating the decent work, and it's not generating buen vivir. So surely we can push the idea that there should be a premium on alternatives that do meet these multiple objectives. Now, I think what seems to be have happened in international development policy is this, particularly in relation to developing countries, we see a certain revival, a turn to the notion that we need greater social protection and social policy. What seems to be missing is this idea that what, if we look back to the so-called golden era that got us out of the Great Depression and the World Wars, particularly in Europe, what we had there was not only a welfare state, i.e. social policy, but we also had the idea of the decent work corporation, where aspects to do with economic productivity, aspects to do with the social protection and conditions of workers, and aspects to do with labor rights and their political empowerment came together. We had, to some extent at least, a sort of integrative micro-level institution. Apart from what's the thinking sort of going on in relation to cooperatives, in international development thinking and policy, we don't see much of a focus now on the micro level, the integrative micro level institution. What we see is policy focusing on the economic empowerment of individuals, but not from the integrative perspective we've been talking about. So I think some of the analysis coming out of this conference seems to be suggesting that international development policy and discussions maybe need to refocus in at least four respects. One is the need to go beyond a focus on individuals or the economic empowerment of individuals or just aspects of entrepreneurship and give recognition and support to various forms of group behavior and collective action, which are key for addressing market failures, for enhancing the capacity of disadvantaged groups to exert claims on powerful actors and institutions, and for the reasons of identity and solidarity. Point one. Point two, the need to go beyond the narrow focus on social protection and to emphasize also issues of equality and emancipation. Point three, the need to go beyond a focus on sort of market-centered green economy and eco-efficiency, or what Tim Jackson and others would call sort of relative decoupling, and to focus on the idea of absolute decoupling and deeper transformations in production and consumption patterns. And point four, the need to go beyond the discourse of economic empowerment and focus much more on the conditions and rights that enable political empowerment of subaltern groups, as well as effective means to hold the powerful accountable. Turning to Gramsci, here I think some of the most vibrant debates, if not heated debates, we've had over this question of what really constitutes SSE. What are we talking about? Can we sort of lump together different types of organizations and enterprises? And the second about the role of the state. So many see public policy in the state as having to play a key role in enabling SSE, and others are, of course, concerned about how it impacts autonomy, issues of co-optation, the dilution of SSE principles, and all the state simply outsourcing its responsibilities for social protection to NGOs and others. So these are very complex, sensitive, and potentially divisive issues. So I think in this conference we've heard a lot about Polanyi and the need to sort of re-embed economy in societal institutions, but perhaps we need to hear a bit more about Gramsci and the idea of what it takes, what's required to build a counter-hegemonic movement. Now, that involves building the pluralism José Luis talked about. It involves building broad-based coalitions and alliances. It involves accommodating difference and finding allies in perhaps strange places, as Jem was mentioning with the World Economic Forum. But counter-hegemony, related to the idea of finding allies, it means finding allies within the state. And I think we need to get beyond this conception of the state as just this sort of homogeneous entity. It's not quite the executive committee of the bourgeoisie. and think in terms of something more heterogeneous. We're different within the state, within state structures. We have different ideological perspectives, different institutional cultures and capacities, and different interests are present. And when I'm not here in Geneva, my home base is Nicaragua. And since 1978, when the Somoza dictatorship was still in power, and then we had the revolution in 1979, we've had so many abrupt swings in the nature of state regimes and parties in power. And they make a huge difference to social and solidarity economy on the ground. And the current situation, we have some very interesting developments taking place with the organization of informal sector workers, the unionization of informal workers, and the organization of rural women producers. Now, those things wouldn't have been possible with a number of the previous regimes. So I think governments and parties can make a big difference. Just turning to UNRWS and what we can and what we might be able to do. So obviously we'll do whatever we can to facilitate the sort of research ideas and agendas that have been being put forward here on this panel. In what's important to remember always with UNRWS, and I think a few people still don't know this, is in our case we don't receive any regular funding from the UN budget. So for anything we do, we have to go out and find external funding. But there are always ways we can mobilize resources and participate and collaborate with other researchers in this field. So what we'll be doing over the coming weeks and months, we'll be digesting the wealth of information and knowledge that has come out of this conference. There will be a lot of publications of different types, ranging from the short policy briefs to online paper series to edited volumes, special issues of journals, and I'll be getting back to all the people the authors who've prepared papers about our plans, and also be seeking your advice on possible publications outlets. Apart from that, and apart from the call for papers around which we organize this conference, we're also involved in a sort of competitive bid for funding on how SSE might contribute to more and better work. And this is something we're doing in collaboration with the ILO, with the University of Geneva. And there will be 9 studies in developing countries around that project, should it be successful. This is a competitive bid, and we still have to go through a second round, so that might not happen. But the proposal and the ideas are there. And we've had, you know, some really interesting discussions here with the SSE networks and others, and of course about the ILO, about possible ways of moving these collaborations forward and participating in joint research projects and events. And we were, of course, open to discussing other possibilities. I was very pleased to learn just now about the development in relation to the RIPES International Forum in October. And the idea that the ASEAN ministers will be able to have a meeting back-to-back or as part of that initiative. And UNRWS looks forward to supporting that in whatever way we can. And the other event process with which we're participating is the next meeting of the Rencontre de Mont Blanc, which will be held in Chamonix in November. And we're participating with them in sort of framing the agenda. And that also should be an interesting encounter with high-level ministers, if not presidents and prime ministers. So we're pleased to support these initiatives in any way we can. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you, Peter. Now, from the floor, we'd like to ask you to go straight away to your recommendations. No more debate whether you like or not the recommendations from the podium here. I see that hands there. That hand, and that one, and this one. 5, okay? First 5, please.
Jerry Lieberman, I'd like to make recommendations following up on the two Peters comments, if I may. Peter Singer, I would suggest, in response to what you've said, that instead of leaving here not too happy because it's ending, that we leave here asking everyone to add a question to this survey: how can each of us contribute to this movement? What is it that we bring that can add value to carry out the mission of this organization that doesn't exist yet? If you would agree to that concept, enhancing what you've said, I would really like that to happen, because this instrument doesn't permit us to say how we can help bring about this activity. And I think we want to do something to help that. That's why we came here, and my wife and I, and paid thousands of dollars to do that. And that would include also looking at what the practitioners did yesterday, who also spent thousands of dollars to come here. Unfortunately, it wasn't a good setting. There was a tremendous amount of hard work done by the staff to make it work. But there were some excellent practical things done, and I would suggest that we look at that. We don't just leave it on a desk that people don't pick up, but we look at some of the very practical suggestions that were made at that, because if you don't apply theory and practice, we don't go anywhere. And this includes really becoming much more systematic, methodological, and scientific, and validating what we do. And the other Peter, I would strongly recommend that if you want to be successful in getting these resources to continue this, that you consider including some of the people in this room, because we have expertise that can add to your very excellent but very small staff. And some of us are actually doing some cutting-edge work already in this area, and we would like to contribute on our own resources, so we're not asking for money. Maybe we can help you find some money, and that's an invitation on the part of the Evolution Institute to help you in that endeavor, as well as help build the movement. And that includes the idea that I commend you for, and that is we shouldn't be ruling out states, because this is the United Nations. And if we're going to be true to the mission of the United Nations, we should certainly be considering those states that are very, very advanced culturally in human rights and in equality and in gender and in everything else. And they exist in the world, and they're rated by the United Nations. And some of them rate very, very high every year after year after year. And they are very democratic, and the people trust their government, and they view their government as them. Thank you.
In response to the counter-hegemonic project and the need for a communication policy, I'm wondering if some kind of structured exchange program between the youth of different countries can be created, where they can see and connect with different social and solidarity economy experiments going on in different parts of the world, and have a kind of a core youth, a group who can exchange and build on this and participate in the projects and maybe think of their own projects, if some kind of a structured initiative can be built for youth exchange.
Yes, thank you very much. I have three recommendations following the admonition of Peter Utting. The first is, perhaps consider changing the name social solidarity economy to social solidarity society. Because we're really talking about a much more embracing thing than the economic activities. And I understand that SSS may not be quite as attractive as an acronym, but I'll leave it there. Two, I want to commend, last night Benjamin Quiñones presented basically the same film he presented this morning in the context of the RIPES, and I want to pick up on the very, very important element of the five principles that he had, the fifth one, which has not been as important, I believe, in our discussions during these 2.5 days. And I would like to simply emphasize the importance of the environmental, the issue of sustainability as an umbrella which must encompass all of the rest of our activities. But finally, I want to focus on the concept of surplus, the importance that all communities, whatever we're doing, in one way or another, we are generating surpluses, we are managing or wasting surpluses. In terms of concrete resources, the question of surplus is a question that communities must face. At the present time, communities rarely face it, of the distribution of surplus in a conscious, in a planned way between the individuals in the community and the way in which the community itself allocates surpluses collectively. But there's also the issue, and this is, seems to me extraordinarily important, especially being here in the ILO, of the fact that there's a gigantic surplus of people that are misused, that are unused, that are thrown away. The possibility of, within a social solidarity society, of guaranteeing that everyone have a minimum standard of living, but in response to that guarantee, people have a responsibility to participate with their energies in constructing the elements that would go, all of the elements, that is the productive, the cultural, the social, the political, and the environmental, in constructing the infrastructures that are necessary to improve the qualities of our lives and the possibilities of our planet. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I will go quickly. So I would like, I will recommend, we tried for those last 3 days to understand what was SSE. And for me, SSE is like a big elephant. So I will give you the list of elements we should find in SSE. So we should find the body of the elephant, which is a market. Because what is destroying our economies today, it's mass marketing. Second thing, the trunk of the elephant. This is a profit. Because the profit is important. We have to make the distinction between what is a profit for an informal economy and private economies. Then, third thing, which is the brain of the elephant. The brain of the elephant, for me, what is a solidarity economy is willing to help people in difficulties. And the legs of the elephant. The legs of the elephant is the items of the SSE, which is mutualism, philanthropy, cooperative, and finance for the poor. And last, which is the tail of the elephant. The tail of the elephant for me is representing the state. And of course, the state, we have two different states. We have one state which is intervention in the social economic affairs. And I prefer to have this separate, because we have two different entities. We have the states, we do a business of social economies, and we have a state, and we have NGOs, for example, or mutualism, or philanthropic, we do a social work. So I don't feel like they have to be mixed. I think it's better to keep them separate, especially the state should look after the environment, should look after depollution, and so on. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much. And I appreciate and I congratulate UNRIST to organize this meeting with ILO in ILO. But my recommendation, I will be brief, yes, because I hear also about social protection as I'm engaged with the UN agencies in Geneva. But it will be really very interesting and it will be happiness for all experts and researchers to organize same thing with WTO, World Trade Organizations, which is in charge to regulate free trade, regulate globalizations and developments. Development that is no without trade and trade development. And because social protection are... because ILO, it's unique international organizations who signed an important instrument with WTO. And it will be really very interesting to organize something in expertise and recommendation about things. Second recommendation about health. As a health, it's important main indicator for development. And not necessarily with WHO, but also with other institutions. And nowadays, R&D and new technologies are very interesting to focusing about that. Last thing, as I raised on my during the first session on my comments, I raised the youth empowerment and the youth empowerment, as I hear also participants networking with me since Monday. I just want to mention that ILO launched a very interesting program on youth empowerment, and which is linked with jobs and development, and it will be very interesting to to give a look about that, give contributions and contribute. And thank you very much.
Okay, next five, please be brief.
I will follow on Jerry's recommendation regarding commitments and contributions. First, from the ILO side, as the ILO DG has said, we will be working very hard on integrating social and solidarity economy into the informal, rural, crisis and youth areas of critical importance, but also social protection and forced labor. As Peter said, this is ILO is a normative institution. We will be having, for instance, a standard-setting discussion around informal economy. The role of cooperatives and other social and solidarity economy organizations will be critical there. That draft is under preparation, and we are very much engaged with that. The conceptions of work, social and solidarity economy, what kind of employment relations does it engage in? Voluntary, facilitating self-employment, the kind of jobs it creates. This is an important area of research for us that we would like to engage. Tomorrow, trade unions and worker ownership, worker cooperatives will be coming together for a discussion, a whole day discussion. And this is with the Worker Activities Department of the ILO, and there will be publication and certain actions emerging from that. And in fact, in that context, we are also engaging with the same idea in Greece on how to think about bankruptcy, bankrupt companies being turned, transformed into worker ownership. Measurement is a critical issue, even when we talk about well-being indicators. Somebody has to count it. Statisticians have to be inspired and engaged. It is great that the International Conference on Labor Statistics is picking up for the first time this year co-op statistics. That's co-ops. That's been around for how many hundreds of years, and we're just getting to them. So it's very important to keep pushing on the statistics. And some of our UN agencies are very good at engaging with the state statistics offices. We can have breakthroughs with them. There is interest from ILO field offices. There's hunger for these ideas, where the real work on the ground happens. We talk a lot here, but real work, a lot of work happens on the ground. The projects that are working on youth employment, women empowerment, are asking us for tools. Okay, we think social economy, we hear social solidarity economy. Tell us how. What kind of training tools? Which school curricula? And we need to respond. And there is a collective responsibility of similarly, we've been working a lot on co-op legislation and policy, but we are getting requests for social and solidarity economy framework legislation. Yes, many of you know of the Social and Solidarity Economy Academy that's been going on for 3 years, rethinking it with UNRIS, with UN and GSC and other colleagues here is also on the agenda. New energy, deepening, strengthening, bringing in worker co-ops and ILO social partners. We are committed to creating a momentum around us in the ILO. We have champions. South-South Project, initiative of the ILO, has put a lot of resources into this. We have been making noise. This is the communication aspect that Mr. Karadzic was saying, inside the institution. And we need to build strategic partnerships with you all. I think this will help us to be able to hook on to the co-op movement, to hook on to the key, leading, inspiring initiatives from around the regions, Asia, Africa, Latin America. And we need to gain leadership commitment in raising resources. We had our DG here, but we are going to have to keep pushing at it. And we are committed to following up on this with an informal interagency task force to be established with UNRIS, ILO, UN, NGLS, OECD, UNDP, and whoever else is willing to join.
Okay.
As well.
Can we go to the next?
Thank you. 3 points. Wages, business, and democracy. Wages, I think earlier this morning there was a discussion about a cooperative in Argentina where there was a mixture of people who were in the traditional wage-employment relationship and those that were a new administrative board. So I think it's important, if you're moving towards a new society and a new post-capitalist economy, to think carefully about the wage-employment relationship. And I would urge the ILO and other partners here to work more on this with a view to going beyond it, number one. Number two, business. And Daryl mentioned this very cogently, I think. Business schools, you know. I have been teaching in a business school in Pakistan. I would be happy to take some of your ideas on board and adapt what I'm saying to these kids who are anxious also to know about the ethical side of business. Their parents may not be. So the idea of a youth group that Mrs. Mukherjee mentioned is a very good thing. Finally, sir, Mr. Singer, democracy is a beautiful idea, but is being exploited in a tremendously negative fashion in most post-colonial countries. You know it better than I do. And the issue of populism versus democracy, I think, needs to be studied very carefully. Thank you.
Can we have our comments, suggestions short, please? We're
okay.
Running out of time.
I will be very brief, but there's a second suggestion which I hadn't expected, but Peter Utting has inspired it. But the first one is with respect to the many sessions that are going to be held later today and on community currencies and Jem Bendall and Margie Mendel, Jem Bendall's comments. You raised lots of other financial products, instruments, tendencies, innovations that are not being addressed here, impact investing, crowdfunding, community bonds, the list is social banks, credit unions, and so on. And those of us who've been working in the social and solidarity economy for years know that access to capital remains a very important need. And while community currencies these are laudable and they're important and they're interesting, they are just one of a piece that we should have a range of discussions on all instruments from community currencies through microcredit all the way to patient capital. And particularly when we're talking about scaling and so on, this becomes even more important. And for Peter Utting, I wear another hat. I'm also the director of the Carl Polanyi Institute in Montreal, and I invite you to go to the website. And there's a really excellent article on Gramsci and Polanyi by Michael Borowai. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I speak on behalf of OECD, which I represent here. OECD has done a lot of analysis in the field of social economy and solidarity economy for the last two decades. So I'm glad to have attended this event and glad that there is a sort of awareness rising into the United Nations system. So I think it is really time to get together to create a collective intelligence so that a more coherent approach is developed among players like international organizations.
This is the lady there.
I sit in the worker sectors not by chance, but by choice. And this is a recommendation for the workers that are in this, what we call here SSE. I'm also part of it. And to transition from a for-profit organization to a so-called SSE organization is a fast-changing, conflict-ridden, out-of-the-comfort-zone process as we experience it. And we get to see not only negative human conditioning in us, but also social conditionings in our society. We do this not because we don't want to be for profit, but because we want to be the change that we want to see in the world. And I really appreciate Mr. Bendel's call for the transformative aspect of this sector. So my call to workers in SSE is to themselves self-reflect, and not only that, share the reflections that they've done with the people who are here, the researchers, the academics, and the policymakers, and also to celebrate themselves in the process. There is no such thing as pain working. We are not about to create the system to do despair work, but to do really empowering, positive work for ourselves and for people that we love around us.
Okay, any last hands? One? Okay. Two, okay.
I would also like to make the recommendation that we are attentive to build bridges with social movements. We've spoken at length about building bridges with governments, and this is a very laudworthy commendation, but also with social movements, and in particular, I have in mind the Via Campesina, because the bridge between food sovereignty and solidarity economy is something that is under construction, and where I think that this can be an important aspect, as food is a fundamental human right.
Yes, Pierre Laliberté, I'm with the Bureau for Workers' Activity at the ILO. And just not to repeat what Simel said so eloquently, but just to emphasize one thing. We are a tripartite organization. This is the only UN body that where non-government have a voting status. And as was pointed out, there will be a discussion on the informal economy next year, with the notion that this should be leading to a standard. The recent experience has shown that even though bodies, NGOs, civil society organizations that do not necessarily have an official status here, that their presence and involvement makes actually a huge difference. We've seen this, recently with the adoption of the Convention on Domestic Workers, where the involvement of many groups really help sharpen, the instrument, but also bring political pressure on all the players in a very important way, in significant way. So I think this is worthy for groups that want to engage on these in these issues, and not only just for the informal economy, but to think as to how they would like to, they could possibly do this. I mean, certainly, there are ways to make that, to facilitate that. So this is an opportunity that should not just be ignored. And thank you.
Thank you. Now let's just call on Mr. Peter Oting to say the closing remarks.
Thank you for so many important, insightful, and I think uplifting ideas about how we can take this agenda forward and build more, even more momentum. As Sarah pointed out in her opening remarks to the conference, a lot of people have worked very hard to make this event happen. And she also acknowledged the support of EVOS, Rosa Luxemburg Foundation, the Ville de Genève, the South-South Cooperation Unit of the ILO, and other ILO departments that made this happen. But on a more personal note, I'd like to sincerely thank Jürgen Schwettmann, Simel Essim, Roberto D'Amiglio, and Anita Amorim, and their colleagues for not only supporting the event logistically and financially, but also really their commitment to the values and objectives which we've been talking about for 3 days. And it's been a pleasure working with them, with you, Simel, and UNRIS hopes to carry that partnership forward. We also look forward to the ongoing collaboration with the ILO SSE Academy and their next big event, which should be in Brazil next year. But let me thank also all the people who participated in the call for papers. There was a remarkable response from the 500 researchers in 70 countries. Sorry we couldn't accommodate everyone, but in particular, a special thanks, of course, to the nearly 40 paper writers who presented throughout these 3 days. And as I said, we'll be shortly back in touch with you about the next steps. Thanks to all the different chairs from the different international organizations, I won't name them again, to the doctoral students and the practitioners who came very much on their own effort, at their own cost, and I think really enlivened these whole proceedings. And I think there were great side events that they participated in. I want a special thanks to Professor Singer, who exceptionally, I think for a high-ranking political figure, has spent an entire 3 days with us, and I think that's fantastic. I think that's what we can call solidarity. And another participant I was most impressed with, moving down the age scale, was little Mara, 5 months old over there, who has also been here 3 days. and I think she's our latest, newest convert to SSE. In fact, I caught Beatrice yesterday evening when Mara was getting a little tired. Instead of reading her a colorful book or a bedtime story, it was showing her the program document. To the interpreters, thank you so much. We we're sorry we had to force you to expand your social science vocabulary and jargon, but you did a remarkable job. And finally, to all the UNRWS staff, who they've all dropped what they normally do to occupy the ILO for these 3 days and to support this event. And as always, they do an amazing job, full of enthusiasm and a lot of creative energy. And a particular thanks to the SSE team over there, Maria Adelaide and Nadine van Dijk. They've been working day and night for many weeks to make this happen. They were a constant source of inspiration for the whole, not just organizationally, but really they designed much of this conference, and particularly the ideas about all the side events. And without this would have been with their help, they've made it all possible. And to all the participants for having taken the time, as has been mentioned, having assumed the costs of coming here, it's very much appreciated. We hope you leave here with new ideas, with new contacts, with new friends, and renewed energy to carry this agenda forward. Thank you very much.
Check out our other podcasts available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unrws.org. Thank you for listening.